This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The situation is there have been ongoing negotiations between the doctors and the nurse association, and government is saying that they cannot increase the wages, and also medical doctors are saying they don't have proper conditions to work, and government is not responding.
That was Amancio Vilanculos from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service on the healthcare crisis in Mozambique. Details coming up. Also, we hear from voters ahead of Zimbabwe's elections tomorrow. And how likely is the BRICS group to expand soon? These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. On the eve of Zimbabwe's national election, reporter Kudzanai Musenge has been speaking to voters and has this report from Bulawayo.
For most voters in Zimbabwe, the focus is on the two main presidential contenders, incumbent 80-year-old Emmerson Mnangagwa of the ruling ZANU-PF party and 45-year-old Nelson Chamisa of the Citizens Coalition for Change. Despite concerns of voter intimidation and violence, especially in rural areas, many Zimbabweans are looking forward to voting Wednesday. Tafadzwa Mnodawafa is a teacher and leader of one of the country's teacher representative organizations. She told VOA voting is an important duty that must not be taken for granted, as the country's liberation struggle was fought in part to attain this right.
It is an act of patriotism, self-determination for every individual citizen. It is a voice that directs any nation's destiny. I'm a teacher, and it determines who my employer is for the next 5 years. A teacher's vote, not cast, leaves everyone else to decide the working conditions for the teachers. Barack Obama actually says a nation is made poorer by its eligible citizens that do not vote.
Moses Kumbuya served in the National Army. He's worried because he says the judiciary played an unprecedented role before the election by barring former ZANU-PF member Sevia Kasukwere from running.
We've never seen it in the history of time that the courts removed a participant on the basis of a technicality. It exactly shows what the intentions are to shape the result of the election in their favor. And I think it's up to the people of Zimbabwe. It will always be up to the people of Zimbabwe to continue on this track or to resist whatever the courts and the ruling party is doing.
26-year-old Tafadzwa Dube is voting for the second time Wednesday. Tafadzwa says although past elections have not brought about desired change, young people in particular should exercise their vote because it can help shape their future.
The reason why I'm going to cast my vote is that I envision a Zimbabwe where, as a young person, I will get access to affordable education, to good health, and also to proper service delivery. I am super excited that I am voting again because my vote will add on to what I envision. Many youths are disgruntled, and some also feel that voting is a futile exercise. What I urge them is that they should go out in their numbers and vote on election day. And also for the unregistered youths, they should go and register to vote so that they can exercise their constitutional rights in future.
Marshall Mzamindo recently retired from his job. He thinks there's likely to be a change of government after this election, so he can't miss the opportunity to participate in it.
Ever since 1980, I've been a voter. So many things have happened from 1980 up to now. Some good, some bad. And it's my belief that the current election is likely to be also historic, in that for the first time, I think we've had a very strong opposition that is likely to tilt the tables against the current ZANU-PF government. And for that reason, I want to be seen to have also participated in that election.
ZANU-PF has dominated the government since independence in 1980. Emmerson Mnangagwa became president in 2017 when the military ousted longtime president Robert Mugabe. Mnangagwa was re-elected in 2018, defeating Chamisa with about 51% of the vote. For VOA, I am Kudzanai Musengi, reporting from Bulawayo.
Remember to check voaafrica.com for all our coverage on Zimbabwe's election. Thousands of Zimbabweans living in other countries are heading home to vote in their country's national elections tomorrow. In South Africa, where more than a million Zimbabweans live, Tuso Khumalo has spoken with several Zimbabweans planning to vote.
With just a few hours to go before the Wednesday vote, some Zimbabweans working in South Africa are already on their way back home, and some have arrived and ready to vote. Zimbabwean National Professor Mapendere traveled all the way to Harare from Cape Town in South Africa, where he is working. He spoke to VOA while on a campaign trail in his car in Zimbabwe's capital.
I see it very important to come and vote because I am aiming for change in Zimbabwe. I am really eager for change in Zimbabwe. Hence, I have put all the resources and I've even managed to leave the work that I was doing in South Africa to come and cast my vote.
Lebani Nkomazana, who has been living in South Africa for close to 2 decades, says come Wednesday, no registered voter should fail to make their voice heard at the ballot box.
One vote counts, and what's most important is that those who are registered must head back home and cast their votes this year. That is important because it might work in favor of the opposition.
The election takes place at a time when anti-migrant xenophobia is growing in South Africa, especially targeted towards Zimbabweans. Another Zimbabwean national, Hepimo Mutezo, says he depends on his vote to improve conditions in his home country so he can leave South Africa and return permanently.
We are stuck here, and they call us with different names as if we are coming from far away, but we are coming just from across the border there. So things are not working for us here in diaspora. As much as we also want to go home, but what keeps us here is because we want to feed and feed the people back home.
Peter Tivenga has been residing in South Africa for years. He is already in Zimbabwe, where he says he is on the campaign trail for his party, the Citizens Coalition for Change.
We want to see the respect of the rule of law, the constitution, so that people can have freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of expression, so that people can live freely in the country.
The ruling ZANU-PF party and the opposition Citizens Coalition for Change are the front runners in the election. 80-year-old President Emmerson Mnangagwa faces a tough challenge from his younger presidential opponent Nelson Chamisa, who is almost half his age. For VOA News, I am Tuso Khumalo in Johannesburg.
The World Food Program warns it will be forced to cut food aid for hundreds of thousands of people suffering from acute hunger in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo because funding for its humanitarian operation has dried up. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The Democratic Republic of Congo is home to the largest food crisis in the world. The United Nations reports political instability and armed conflicts have robbed millions of farmers of the ability to grow the food they need to be healthy. Currently, 25.8 million people in DRC are short of food. The World Food Program reports more than a quarter of that population, some 6.7 million food insecure people, live in embattled Ituri, North Kivu, and South Kivu provinces. Of this number, the WFP country director in the DRC, Peter Musoka, on Tuesday said 1.5 million are in emergency levels of food insecurity, just one step away from famine. Speaking from the capital, Kinshasa, he says WFP's humanitarian operation is on life support and does not have enough money to feed all the people who do not have enough to eat.
In July alone, WFP managed to reach approximately 1.2 million people, but sadly, without additional funding, it's unlikely that we'll be able to reach even half of our intended target. The people of Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo need our immediate attention and support to prevent a full-scale humanitarian catastrophe.
Musoka says WFP requires $728 million for its operation in the eastern region. Unfortunately, he notes WFP faces a staggering funding gap of $567 million. The DRC faces a displacement as well as a hunger crisis. The United Nations reports about 6 million of the 6.3 million internally displaced people reside within the three eastern provinces. Conflicts involving anti-government militia groups have caused a series of interlinked crises affecting people's access to clean water and shelter, health and education. It also has fueled gender-based violence, putting the lives of women and children at risk. UN Refugee Agency spokesperson Shabia Mantu says the severe food shortages in the region are driving women and girls to take greater risks to meet critical needs.
So reports have been received of women and girls being sexually assaulted while collecting firewood and water. Some are forced to resort to harmful coping mechanisms, including transactional sex, and the food insecurity and lack of livelihood opportunities have also increased risks of exploitation and abuse of women and adolescent girls.
The World Food Programme says its humanitarian operation over the next 6 months hangs by a thread and is at a critical juncture. It says lives are at stake and the cost of inaction and lack of international support will be deadly. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The Ethiopian government today said it will investigate a report by a human rights group of killings of hundreds of its nationals at the Yemeni-Saudi border. Ethiopia's foreign ministry said the investigation will be done in tandem with the Saudi authorities. The New York-based group Human Rights Watch released a report yesterday with witness accounts of attacks by border guards in Saudi Arabia using machine guns and mortars on unarmed Ethiopians trying to cross into the kingdom from Yemen. Saudi government officials have told foreign journalists the report is unfounded but have not offered evidence to support the assertion. The International Organization for Migration estimates about 750,000 Ethiopians live in Saudi Arabia, with as many as 450,000 likely having entered without authorization. There is a dual healthcare workforce strike in Mozambique. There is a convergence of nurses and doctors in a nationwide strike that is creating a critical challenge for Mozambique's healthcare system. I talked to Amancio Vilancolas from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service to brief us more on the matter.
According to the information that we have from Maputo, at least two health centers were not attending anyone today. And Maputo is a city of at least over 2 million people in terms of populations. And also our stringers say that even those hospitals which are operational, only emergency rooms and essential service are available, meaning that there's no surgeries, there's no any service for walk-in patients, leaving people stranded in this big city. So the situation is really dire. Also in Beira, which is the second major city, situation is similar. So we have information that in a number of like 200 medical professionals only have, they show it in the major hospital, also leaving people without essential services.
But as this healthcare sector grapples with this double impact strike, shouldn't the government and relevant authorities address these concerns promptly to prevent further deterioration of healthcare services?
The situation is there have been ongoing negotiations between the doctors and the nurse association, and government is saying that they cannot increase the wages, and also medical doctors are saying they don't have proper conditions to work, and government is not responding accordingly. They even brought religious folks to try to negotiate, but government will not respond to their demands. So they're even saying We spoke to the leaders of the medical team who are saying that if they don't respond, even the private operations, they will also join the other doctors to fight for their right. And this happens in a situation where government authorizes the payment of people from the military and also from the police, increasing their wage in a way, but they fail to increase the wages of the people, medical doctors, for example.
Amancio, I mean, since the state implemented pay reforms, you know, at the end of last year, public wages have become a contentious issue in Mozambique. And like you said, it's not only the doctors, but government workers, including the military and police, have experienced delayed paychecks and dissatisfaction as a result of the changes. The root cause is much bigger than what we are actually seeing right now.
Yes, the root cause is much bigger. And for the military and the police, there was an issue about the so-called ghost workers, the Minister of Finance asking them to show up and prove that these people really exist, which accordingly they're failing to prove. But the president went on telling the Minister of Finance to pay the wages of the military and the police, but not dealing with the specific issues the doctors are striking for.
So as far as your stringer is concerned, the information you're getting, this strike will continue, right?
According to the information that we have from the stringers and talking to the leaders of the strike in Mozambique, this will continue for another 21 days, meaning 3 weeks, unless the government solve the issues. And they also threaten to invite other doctors working for private hospitals, private operations to join the strike. So if the government doesn't respond in time and change their wages and also provide them with better equipment, this will take longer and it will make life bad.
That was Amancio Vilanculos from VOA's Portuguese to Africa service on the latest regarding the Mozambique health crisis. In Kenya, many young Maasai men recently underwent the Unotu, a traditional ritual marking the transition from young warrior to adulthood. The French news agency AFP says hundreds of young men between 18 and 26 years of age came to the village of Nyalar in southwestern Kenya. All of them were from the same generation of Murans, or warriors in the Maasai language, a status they have held for a decade. The rite of passage brought together their families as well as local residents and officials, in all several thousand people. The 5-day ceremony featured traditional chants, dances, and the adumu, the famous Maasai jump. Cows were sacrificed and the young men drank the blood. Their mothers shaved their heads and they then abandoned the warrior sword for the walking stick of the elders that signifies their entry to adulthood. The ritual is intended to shape the men into good and responsible citizens. The 15th summit of the BRICS countries begin in Johannesburg today with the expansion of the bloc high on the agenda. Current BRICS members are Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. China, Russia, and South Africa are strongly in favor of adding new members so that BRICS represents what they call a multipolar world. Darren Taylor reports.
China and Russia, in particular, want BRICS to lead a breakaway of the global south from what they call United States-led Western hegemony, as represented by institutions such as the United Nations and World Bank. South African officials, however, have told VOA that BRICS is not anti-West. BRICS represents about 40% of the world population and almost a third of the global economy. Russia and China are also permanent members of the United Nations Security Council and have veto power on UN activities. Independent BRICS analyst Patrick Lukusa says expansion of BRICS won't be a simple process.
This expansion has not garnered the full support of all BRICS members. India has resisted to expanding the BRICS group of nations. We have also seen Brazil, which has accepted, but it said that there should be a full conditions or proper structure that is set up to understand how this expansion is going to take place.
South Africa's International Relations Minister, Naledi Pandor, says only countries who could advance the BRICS development agenda would be considered for membership. Analysts at the summit say Argentina, Nigeria, Indonesia, Saudi Arabia, and United Arab Emirates are some of the strong candidates for inclusion. Economist Petri Riedlinghuis says the sooner BRICS expands, the better.
From the collective BRICS perspective, we're starting to become a bit more powerful than the West. There's a long list of countries that are queuing up, applying to join the BRICS economic alliance, right, or trade bloc. BRICS nations and all the ones that will be joining are becoming increasingly more important and more powerful in the global trade arena. So I think that it's going to be a very interesting decade that lays ahead, and I'm quite keen to see what the outcome of this BRICS summit is going to be.
Lukusa says it's doubtful any formal decision will be made about possible new members this week, given India's resistance and Brazil's hesitancy. He says there'll more than likely be just a broad statement that paves the way toward expansion in the future.
From my view, I believe that an expansion will benefit the BRICS member group. It will allow for trade to happen. It will allow for countries to join the BRICS bank. We've seen Saudi Arabia that being keen on even being a member of this bank.
If richer countries such as China and Saudi Arabia pour money into the new development bank, says Lukusa, it could rival institutions such as the International Monetary Fund in the near future. South Africa's top BRICS official, Anil Suklal, told VOA the foreign ministers of the BRICS countries are meeting Tuesday to deliberate about the admission of new members. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The African Union has suspended Niger from all its activities following a military coup on July 26th. In a statement today, the AU reiterated calls for the coup leaders to release elected President Mohamed Bazoum and return to their barracks. AU Peace and Security Council said it has noted the decision by the West African bloc ECOWAS to activate a standby force for a possible military intervention. The Council asked the AU Commission to assess the economic, social, and security implications of deploying such a force. The AU also called on all member states and the international community to refrain from any action that could legitimize Niger's junta. ECOWAS has said it is ready to intervene in Niger to restore democracy, but is continuing to press for a diplomatic solution. Niger's new ruler, General Abdourahamane Tiani, proposed a 3-year transition back to democracy, which ECOWAS rejected. The coup has heightened international worries over the Sahel, which faces growing Islamist insurgencies linked to Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State group. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.